Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Talk Podcast Week 1 Review and Week 2 Preview Edition. This is Hakun Wong, the editor-in-chief at Football Garbage Time, with me on the line, as usual, Ryan Whitfield and Joey Olibro, senior staff writers from Football Garbage Time. How you doing, guys?
Great.
All right.
I'm doing, everybody... doing well, enjoying the new music.
Yeah, I thought you might switch it up a little bit today. All right. So anyway, we got a lot to talk about this week, and I know there was a lot that went on last week, and I'm sure that you guys are super excited about how this all kind of shaped up over the first weekend. I know, Ryan, I saw how psyched you were about the Pats taking out the Arizona Cardinals in Arizona without Brady or Gronk. I can safely say that gloating would be an understatement.
Yeah, I tried to stay away from the Homer tanks as much as possible. However, I had one too many drinks on Sunday night when the end of that game, so I was waving the red, white, and blue flag pretty hard.
Right, the red, white, and blue flag being the Patriots flag, of course, not the U.S. flag.
Course.
I'm sure that was in the background somewhere. and Joey, I'm sure you're pretty excited as well. I mean, Eli actually showed a little bit of offensive prowess. There was a bad interception, but that really wasn't his fault. And they managed to come away. Yeah. So you must have been pretty happy with that.
I'm happy that we won. Of course, it was a close game. Prescott is the real deal, I think now. Just seeing that whole thing where the preseason, you know, we talked about that in the preseason podcast. You know, he was kind of hyped up in my opinion, but I think he really held his own.
Yeah. No, most definitely. But I was interested to see how Shepard would hold up, and it looks like your preseason prediction, Shepard looks like he's the real deal. Looks like he's going to be he's going to be pretty good in this. Yep. So anyway, we got an upgraded podcast today. We got all these great drops. Check that out. We're already getting started with that. And we got a lot to get to today, so let's just go ahead and get right to it. First thing we're going to do is talk about one takeaway from the week one. All right, Joey, why don't we start with you? Tell us, what's your one takeaway from week one?
My biggest takeaway from week one was how the Giants defensive line just dominated the Cowboys offensive line. People think that the Cowboys offensive line is the best in the league by far. Giants just whooped them all game. JPP and Olivier Vernon actually at one point in the game were lined up on the same side of the line of scrimmage. JPP was in three-point stance, and Vernon was up like an outside linebacker, and they were giving Lyle Collins and Tyron Smith troubles all game. And, Bleacher Report does this NFL 1000 thing where they rank week by week what players at each position.
Right.
And Vernon and JPP were 1 and 5 respectively. So
wow.
I was actually really, really impressed with that against a strong offensive line as well. They didn't get any sacks, but I think that will change against the Saints this week.
Interesting. You think that's going to – I mean, the Saints, are an offensive juggernaut. I mean, you don't think that's going to change things up a little bit? I mean, Breeze is pretty savvy in the pocket. We saw he's not mobile, but he's really good at making guys miss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's shifty in the pocket, but they don't have the – I don't think they have as good as an offensive line. And I think Dallas's offense is a little bit quicker, maybe.
Right.
Breeze is more like downfield, so maybe Vernon and JPP can get back there.
Well, but of course you got now to deal with Willie Snead, breakout fantasy superstar Willie Snead, and Brandon Cooks, both of which had really amazing days.
Game.
Do you think the Giants defense secondary can contain them?
Janoris Jenkins had a really great game last week. He was on Dez Bryant all game. Bryant only went for one catch for 8 yards, and that wasn't even on Janoris Jenkins. It was on our safety on the first play of the game, actually. So he was ranked number 5 at corner for the Bleacher Report 1000 as well. So I think if he shows up, and so does Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie and our rookie Eli Apple, then we might be able to contain them, but I don't think we'll be able to stop them all the way.
All right. Well, I'll give you a little bit of let it fly. That's good analysis there. So your one takeaway being that the Giants' defense was actually better than we all thought coming out of the preseason at this point. Is that what you're thinking?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, that is definitely legit, and we're going to get back to that shortly because I'm going to talk a little bit about Dak Prescott. But let's go to you, Ryan. Tell us, what's your one takeaway from week one?
You know, there was a lot of great topics to choose from this week. You know, the Jets and the Bengals locked in a game of who's going to lose it first. That awesome offensive performance by Buffalo in Baltimore, or Terrence Williams not knowing how to play Mighty Mike football and not knowing that you got to go out of bounds and you got no timeouts left and there's 5 seconds on the clock. But
obviously I had to go with
Jimmy. Oh my God, and Dez Bryant's freak out in the background was just all time.
It was priceless.
But obviously I'm going to go Jimmy G here.
Right.
I can't remember if I said it on the podcast last weekend or not, or if it was kind of a late-breaking opinion for me throughout the week. I wouldn't have taken the Patriots with the points going into that game, and by the time it kicked off, they were 9.5-point underdogs. So that says how little faith I had in that game. I didn't think Jimmy G looked very good in the preseason. And, you know, he comes out. You have 3 months to prepare for that game, all offseason. He's been in the system for 3 years now. He comes out on the first throw. You know, the play that they've had drawn up since June for this game, and they come out and they execute it perfectly. They got Chris Hogan on a crossing route, and Jimmy, after sniffing smelling salts for about 30 seconds on the sideline, comes out and sails the ball about 5 yards over Hogan's head. So, you know, when that happened, it was a uh-oh moment. But then he started feeding Edelman, moving the ball down the field. You know, I don't think he made a lot of beautiful throws. You know, I seen the local fans around here say his touchdown pass to Hogan was a dime. I wouldn't really classify that as a dime. I'd classify that as a good play read and setting up Hogan in a way that he could beat a guy who's a converted running back. You know, that's not so much where I was impressed. I was impressed with his composure in the pocket. I was impressed with his ability to move and scramble and make plays. The 3rd and 15 on the last drive where they scored the go-ahead field goal. You know, he had to slide out of the pocket, buy some time, be patient, and wait for Amendola to clear the second level there and then deliver the ball. So, you know, the game didn't speed up for him. He kind of had, like, a real gamer performance in that sense. So he was my major takeaway. The Patriots in general are I think they're a wagon again this year. I get sick of saying it, but even more so than last year's. LeGarrette Blount has found some new legs. That he hasn't had since 2014. He had a really bad year last year, and he came back in much better shape this year. The offensive line
held
up pretty well.
Wow, you're coming around on LeGarrette Blount, huh? That's amazing. All preseason, you were down on him.
I was, but he, you know, the last two preseason games, he started to win me over, and then, you know, what he did last game. I mean, at the end of the day, I actually read a report this week that this is a crazy stat. LeGarrette Blount, out of all qualified running backs in New England history in the qualifiers, 400 carries in their career as a New England Patriot, has the highest yard per carry average of any running back. So that's above Corey Dillon. That's above Curtis Martin. That's above, you know, the years with Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, Lawrence Maroney. So he is the most efficient running back the Patriots have ever had for any length of time. So, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to eventually tip your cap. And then my one last little shout-out, and I'll turn it over. I got to love you, Chandler Jones, but not showing up with a sack until the fourth quarter. Typical Chandler Jones, doesn't, you know, he flashes once a game. Getting up, getting a penalty, although it was more the defensive back to dance with him. But still, he recovers a fumble and did a sack dance as if he had done anything on the play but be in the right place at the right time. Just confirmed everything I thought, because if there was any game for Chandler Jones to go off and really show everybody that he is an elite player, it was against his old team playing against two backup tackles, and he was a no-show as usual. So hope he enjoys his time smoking K2 in Arizona, but we don't miss him up here.
All right. Well, we all know that you're totally for the Patriots. So that's not a surprise that you're going to go hit Jimmy G. But let me ask you this question. Is Jimmy G, in your opinion, the next guy under center for the Patriots? I mean, is it – I've heard some talk that Tom Brady, you know, maybe they trade him. Maybe he gets some value. Maybe Belichick pulls a Belichick, gets a primo value, gets him down to Dallas, like I've heard some people talk about, and he pulls a Drew Bledsoe, right? And then you got Jimmy G stepping in as your new Brady. I mean, what do you think of that?
You know, it is the hardest sports question anybody's ever asked me, and I've had to soul search on it a lot. Brady, you know, Brady has made many a Catholic in Boston commit a sin from worshiping false idols. He is a god to us. I mean, this is a guy that came out of nowhere. He's been here. He's played 16 years here. He's one, I think, if not the longest, one of the top five longest tenured Patriots in the history of the franchise, and obviously the greatest quarterback of all time. So it's hard to ever think of moving on without him. However, the contract situation really comes to a head after next season, 2017. You got to see what Jimmy can do the next three games, and then you got to kind of evaluate what Brissett is over the next year and decide if Brissett could potentially replace Brady 5 years down the line. It's going to be a tough decision, but the idea of flipping Jimmy G for a first-round pick and then holding on to Brady for 3 years, there's nothing more valuable than a franchise quarterback. So I don't care how many first-round picks you get. If you're trading away a franchise quarterback, you're losing that deal. So I was on board with that for a while, but if he comes out and plays like the next three games, as tough as this is to say, yeah, I think you hold on to him and see if there's any decline in 2017 next year with Brady, and then maybe you make the hardest decision the franchise has ever had to make with parting ways with him.
Yep. All right. Well, that's all fair. That's fair. That would be really surprising, but I would like to see them do that because, quite frankly, Brady's value is sky high. They could get a lot for him. And if they think Jimmy G can develop into somebody that's long-term, then that's something that Belichick will do. You know, we've seen that before of lots of other players in New England. All right, so let me just turn to my one takeaway from week one, and that's Kelvin Benjamin, because obviously he missed all of last year due to an ACL tear, had a fantastic breakout season in his rookie season, pulled in over 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns, really, really just came out of nowhere in some ways, but sat in really well with Cam Newton. And the question mark that came into this season was, will he be able to pick up where he left off? Because there's Devin Funchess and there's Greg Olsen and all these other people out there that Cam was able to get to the Super Bowl with. And what I was surprised to see in that kickoff game was that he was the main guy. I mean, quite frankly, he ended up with 12 targets, which is 3 more targets than Greg Olsen, and which is much more than anybody else on the team. So that's almost a third of Cam Newton's targets for the day. He played 51 of 72 offensive snaps, was incredibly, incredibly efficient. He had 6 receptions for 91 yards. He had some great shake and bake moves. He managed to shed Roby in one situation and run down the sideline. He had a touchdown. He looked like the guy. He looked like he's going to pick up exactly where he left off. And they said after the game that they didn't want to play him that much. But quite frankly, if he's going to do that well, he's going to be an offensive weapon for you. He's going to have to get the snaps. And Cam obviously has a lot of faith in him. So that was very surprising to me. I thought that was a major takeaway. I think there's a little bit of a shift now. I'm down on Devin Funchess. I'm up on Kelvin Benjamin. I'm up on Greg Olsen. I think Cam Newton, assuming that he doesn't have a concussion that they illegally let him play through, he's going to become just as good as he was in previous seasons. So that was all interesting to me from the perspective of how were the Carolina Panthers going to change. But I was surprised to see them lose to the Denver Broncos. I think the only one of us to guess that was Joey. So speaking of that. And we told everybody, don't trust me. That was well publicized. So, let's turn to the next topic of the day, which is actually what to look for in week two. So Ryan, let me start with you. Tell me, what are the two things you want to look for? You're looking forward to in week two.
Yeah. So first one, again from a self-serving purpose, you know, I want to see if Jimmy G can replicate it. His performance week one. Also on the flip side. I'm interested to see if the Dolphins are for real. A lot of people are saying that the Patriots can't sleep on the Dolphins because the way they performed last week. Historically, the Seahawks defense starts off really – I mean, offense starts off slowly each year. So I'm not overly surprised that they were kind of shut down last week. Plus, I actually executed a trade in one of my fantasy leagues just this week to get rid of Russell Wilson, because that is going to be the most porous offensive line in football. So when you put a decent a defensive line against it, it had Russell running for his life the whole game. So I'm interested to see two parts in that game. You know, if the Patriots can kind of build up the momentum and have another solid week, and if Miami's actually somewhat for real here. And then the second one, which, you know, kind of came to a head last night, I think it's the beginning of the end for Rex Ryan. So it'll be interesting to see how the rest of it plays out. They actually fired their offensive coordinator this morning, which, you know, I don't know. When you give him no weapons, Rex, and you continue just to draft a bunch of defensive players, I don't understand what he's expecting. You know, you sign Tyrod Taylor for franchise quarterback money. You get rid of Chris Hogan, replace him with nobody. Get rid of Percy Harvin, replace him with nobody. And then, you know, your de facto third receiver is an Olympian, you know, kind of a niche guy. Sammy Watkins can't run a route to save his life. The only thing he can do is streak down the field, and he's got great hands. So it's just that organization's a mess. And I think the Rex Ryan experiment's finally coming to an end here. You know, he's only four games under 500 in his career, but that's severely skewed by the 2009 and 2010 season that he had with the Jets, where he went back-to-back AFC championships. Since then, he's had 2-8-8 seasons, and every other season's been below 500. He's on track for another
below 500
this year.
Let me ask you this about Rex Ryan, though. I mean, as you mentioned, he fired offensive coordinator Greg Roman today. That seems to me like a scapegoat. I mean, quite frankly, last night the Buffalo offense managed to put up 24 points on the Jets defense. That's not bad. And quite frankly, if you look at Greg Roman's stats from the beginning of last season when he took over as offensive coordinator, and keep in mind he was in the running to the head coach position before Rex Ryan got that position, he actually brought the Buffalo Bills in and made them first in rushing yards per game. So an eighth in yards per play. So he wasn't terrible. You know, I mean, he was terrible in the first week. Granted, that was a terrible, terrible showing in the first week. But last night wasn't that bad. But the problem was that they let Ryan Fitzpatrick put up 400 yards. That their defense was atrocious. That the only way they could stop Brandon Marshall was to illegally pull him down by his face mask and almost tear his knee in half. So, you know, I see the problem here as being Rex's brother, not Greg Roman. So I feel like this is a little bit of a scapegoat situation. What do you think of that? What do you think of that, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a scapegoat. They're already, I love it. They're already in cover your ass time, or cover your ass mode up in Buffalo. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever had any experience with the Bills Mafia. They're the most annoying fan base in the NFL. And I actually went onto Instagram last night just to troll the Bills Mafia and wrote like this long post about now you can't even win games in September. It's so much for the
what,
September
right?
Super
Bowl.
What,
Ryan? You're trying to instigate? That's so crazy. Can't believe that.
But much to my disappointment, I was getting comments back from everybody saying, no, I completely agree. We got to get rid of Rex. I mean, the Buffalo fans were like crying
wow.
to me. I also became their therapist. It was a really wow. awful moment for me.
That is really awful.
Rob Ryan hasn't been good in years. So there's definitely some issues there. I don't think Rex knows how to build the team. And I think he's going to stop recycling his dad's playbook from the late 80s, early 90s, because it's a different game now. And at the end of the day, you know, you can make the excuse he doesn't have a great quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick's not a great quarterback. But when you put Eric Decker, Brandon Marshall, Matt Forte around him, you know, when you put enough
weapons around
him. And
don't forget
Anunua,
who came out.
Anunua,
yeah.
So, I mean, you get to a point that, like, if you put enough weapons around a mediocre quarterback, he can look good. So you got to do that, and you got to stop drafting. You know, when they're big, they already had a good defense. And he picked his first two picks of this year's draft, he went defensive players. And it's just like, what are you doing? You know, so he will be fired. There's usually at least one coach every year gets fired midseason. That will be Rex this year, and I won't shed any tears. There was a brief moment in 2009 and 2010 that he restored the Patriots-Jets rivalry, and I really believed in the guy. And as much as I hated him, I loved him for what he was giving me out there, somebody to hate, give me the villain. And since then, he's just been kind of a blowhard. You know, kind of almost like a sad clown, you know, somebody that you kind of point and laugh at, but, he's not good for the league anymore.
Right. Okay. Well, I agree with a lot of what you just said there about Rex. I never thought He's good at defense, but he is not showing it. He's actually ruined the defense in Buffalo, and he's not doing anything good for them now. All right, Joey, let's turn to you. Tell me, what are your two things that you're looking forward to this coming weekend?
The first thing I'm interested in watching is if Sam Bradford starts versus the Packers this week. Mike Zimmer has been hush-hush about who's going to be starting this week. Sean Hill did okay last week. Yeah, Adrian Peterson really needs to get going. I think he was 19 carries, 31 yards. That's not going to cut it this week against the Packers.
No, not at all. Right.
So if it's Bradford, I want to see if this trade was a crash and burn as I expected it to be, or they actually might get something out of Bradford.
Yeah, and they gave up a lot for that. From what I understand, a first rounder next year and a fourth rounder in 2018,
yep.
which is pretty significant for a guy who is not theoretically the future, because I think they're still assuming Teddy Bridgewater comes back next year, which means they're going to have a little bit of a logjam back there if this becomes the case. So tell me, so what about the your second thing that you're looking forward to?
My second takeaway, or my second thing to look forward to is Jameis Winston and the Bucs versus the Cardinals. Winston really put on a show last week against the Falcons. You know, we talked about the Cardinals, Ryan did, about the Patriots and everything. They struggled even against Jimmy G. And if Winston can have just a solid game, I think the Bucs will actually win with the momentum they have and everything. So I think I really want to see them do well. Dirk Cutter, he's an excellent offensive mind. I think that Bucks have a chance to be wild card, even contend with the Panthers in the NFC South.
So the thing I see that's a problem with the Cardinals, actually, is that their defense is a little bit weak on – it's one-sided. I mean, so you got Patrick Peterson out there, and then you got, like, a lot of kind of question marks. So I kind of feel like if they're going to have – they're going to have to use him as kind of a shutdown corner type, and they're not willing to do that. I mean, we saw they were not willing to do that. And in fact, the problem with the Patriots is there's nobody they need to target to shut down. I mean, they're all kind of, they're all question marks in themselves. But what do you think with this showdown with the Bucs? Do you think that they should have Peterson kind of shadowing Mike Evans, take him out of the game? Vincent Jackson didn't look overly impressive last week. Or do you think that this is something where the Cardinals defense is going to be able to bounce back without having to do that?
I think they should. I think Peterson should cover Mike Evans the entire game. Vincent Jackson's getting up there in age, and the Bucs don't really have any other like real threats that'll do anything much. Austin Seferine Jenkins had a great catch last week on that awesome throw by Winston. But I think if Peterson, holds his own, then it'll be a worse game for Winston than it was last week. Give the Cardinals a chance, but I still like the Bucs.
Interesting. So you don't think that Carson Palmer and his production with Larry Fitzgerald is going to hold up this week, or that they're going to try and take Larry Fitzgerald out, and you're going to still have – I mean, they still have Michael Floyd. They still got, John Brown, a lot of offensive weapons there. You don't think that the Cardinals will be able to get that going against the Bucs defense?
Oh, I'm sure. They're going to put up some points for sure. The Bucs secondary is pretty rough. Out of Vernon Hargraves, that's about it. That's all they have in the secondary. But I think Winston's going to be able to go point for point with Palmer. And Cardinals were really sloppy last week against the Patriots. And if those mistakes keep up, then it's going to be another loss for them this week.
Right, I totally agree with that. I do think the Cardinals were really, really sloppy last week. Not taking anything away from your Patriots, Ryan, but the Cardinals' defense was particularly sloppy, I thought. So let me turn to two things that I want to look forward to. So there are two things that I thought are very interesting. We had two rookies start last week under center, Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott. Joey, you mentioned Dak a little bit. I'll start with Carson Wentz because he's the more interesting guy to me in many ways, because in college he was basically nobody. I mean, he had a relatively good completion percentage in college, and he was decent, but he didn't even start all the games that during his 4 years at North Dakota State, and he never won any awards or got any recognition during that time. That entered the media, it was basically his performance at the Senior Bowl that put him on the map, and then Philly sold away their future in order to get him as the second overall pick. And the original plan was to sit him behind Sam Bradford. Bradford threw a hissy fit, which is not surprising. Came back to camp, ultimately got traded, as you guys all mentioned, as Joey mentioned, to the Vikings for way too much. after they lost Teddy Bridgewater. So Wentz surprisingly got the start this last week against the Browns, where Jared Goff, who I thought was going to start for the Rams when they was taken first overall, was a healthy scratch, essentially. So Wentz ended up being surprisingly effective, I thought. 22 of 37, 59.5% completion percentage, 278 yards, two touchdowns, average of 7.51 yards per attempt. Now, it was interesting because of a number of things. First of all, the Browns have had one of the worst defenses in 2015, the third worst, actually, and they were just as bad last week. And they put little pressure on Wentz to force passes or take chances. But secondly, I saw this on ESPN, Wentz actually was they actually put in plays for Wentz to actually pass more on first down than second or third down. And apparently that was on purpose because you see base defenses about a third of the time during first down and you don't see them that often on second and third. So he was able to more easily dissect and understand those defenses. And not surprising, he completed 9 of 13 on first down for 140 yards, which is more than half of his total production. So that's interesting, and I'll be interested to see if that continues against the Bears on Monday night, and I suspect that it will because the Bears' defense has been middle of the road, hasn't been able to put a lot of pressure on opposing offenses, and I suspect that Philly will continue to simplify what Wentz is doing, and they'll continue to feed Ryan Matthews the ball regardless of his poor per-carry average in order to keep pressure off of him. So I really do think that that he's going to be able to keep it moving, even though he doesn't have a lot of weapons around him, and that's really interesting to me because he has one NFL experience outside of this start against the Browns, and that was in the preseason where he cracked a rib. So that'll be interesting to me. Now Dak Prescott, which Joey you mentioned earlier, I think he is legitimate, and he's one of those guys in college who was a big deal. I mean, he was a huge deal. He is fourth overall in the SEC for career touchdowns ever. I mean, that's impressive. Third in the SEC for total yards ever. I mean, this guy is an impressive guy. He played at Mississippi State all 4 years, I guess he redshirted 1 year, but he was basically there for 4 years. And he rushed for 41 total touchdowns. He threw for 70 total touchdowns. He even caught 3 touchdowns. So this guy was really dynamic, and he was taken as a fourth rounder by the Dallas Cowboys as the future, and he ended up being a great game manager. But he wasn't that dynamic. I didn't see him do a whole lot outside of really kind of manage the offense and let them do their thing. So what do you guys have any thoughts on Dak Prescott or Carson Wentz? Joey, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, I think that's just great coaching by Doug Peterson to build a game plan that's designed to help your rookie quarterback, opposed to Jeff Fisher just basically benching Jared Goff and not even giving him game experience and their complex playbook that they have over in Los Angeles. But they actually I saw a tweet earlier today that said for Wentz, they're going to simplify the verbiage of the West Coast offense for him just to get him used to it and everything. So that's a big help. That's a big hurdle that rookie quarterbacks have to get over. So just to have the simple language for the West Coast offense will do tremendous things for him.
Yeah, I agree with all that. So tell me, Ryan, any thoughts on Wentz and Dak Prescott?
Yeah, I thought Wentz was great. I think I saw a stat. I'll go quick. I know we're up against it here, but I think I saw a stat that he was 9 for 9 against the blitz against Cleveland, which is super impressive for a rookie. Dak Prescott left something to be desired, not to take a shot at your boys there, the Giants. You know, I didn't watch the whole game. I watched Red Zone. But every time the Cowboys on the screen, I'm keying in on Dez. And there was multiple times that Dez actually beat Jenkins off the line. And for whatever reason, he was Prescott's third read. So by the time he'd come back to Dez, he was covered. So I think he's going to watch some game film and realize that he left a lot of yards on the field where he could have got the ball quickly to Dez for some big plays.
Totally agree. All right, so that's all we got for today. So we're going to go ahead and get everybody's Twitter accounts up there so everyone can follow them. Ryan, your Twitter account?
Yes, at Ryan Whitfield, N-E.
All right, and Joey, yours?
Yeah, I'm just at Joey Libro.
All right, and you can follow us at FB Garbage Time, and you get all the new NFL news from us, and we'll be back again next week with more looks into Week 2 and what we're looking for in Week 3. So until then, enjoy your football week.